It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Renee are here. Christina Warren joins us from Mashable. And just in time for the show, everything was updated. OS 10, iOS, Mac OS, Watch TV, Server OS, everything. So we'll talk about what those updates mean, some new GarageBand sounds, and a whole lot more all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 507, recorded Tuesday, May 17th, 2016. Malibu Stacy gets a hat. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/MacBreak and use the offer code MacBreak30. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/MacBreak and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Apple. Wait a minute. I can't do the show. My C-3PO's in the wrong spot. C-3PO tends to wander somewhat.
Abort,
abort. That's Christina Warren in the background there from her Mashable cell.
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Leo.
Nice to see you. Haven't seen you in ages. Welcome.
I know, it's been forever. Good to see you, too.
Yay. Also with us, of course, Renee Ritchie from the fabulous iMore.com and his labs up there in Montreal.
Where it was snowing yesterday, Leo.
No, what?
It was snowing.
Wait a minute.
In order to make myself feel better, I made a nice tropical California drink
for the show.
Good.
I don't know what's in there, and I don't want to know.
Mint mojito coffee, Leo. I tried to recreate
mojito
the Phil's original.
Coffee.
Yes.
A Phil's original.
Yeah, a kind, gentle soul. Thank you, T. Sent me two bags of Phil's coffee, so I've been abusing them for the last week.
The coffee of choice
in
Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And also with us, Andy Anatko. He's in blue today. A vision in blue.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in one of those like karaoke booths for some reason. I've got, for boring reasons, I've had to take down Crame Cam 3000, the future video podcasting, temporarily, and so I've got the camera like actually on the screen, which means you get that really lovely hi. I've got a fluorescent light panel directly in front of my face.
I like it.
I look good?
Yeah, I like it. It brings out the gleam in your glasses.
Yes.
So I'm really at this point unable to do the show because I foolishly said go ahead and update.
Leo, how could you?
And we get a lot of updates. There's a new GarageBand, iTunes 12.4, right, or 2?
Everything, yeah.
And
iOS,
what is
WatchOS, TVOS.
What is this? Yeah, what is this? This is Mac
OS
10.11.4.
I don't know, one of those.
0.4, I think it is. Maybe it's 0.5. I don't know. And then iOS 9.3.2.
Yeah, that came out as a shocker.
And Apple TV OS 9.2.1. They're just completely, for no reason, they just make up these numbers now. Because it's technically the same underpinnings, but the watch is on 2 and the TV
right.
is on 9.
Even though it's all OS, iOS, right?
It's a memory game.
It's all iOS 9. Like, just make it all just, yeah. One you're
number.
Right. It is 10.11.5 because my update on this computer just came through. So it's 10. Which don't worry, I will not install. I'm not going to do that.
So let's start with OS 10. What is this a security update? It's always a security update plus, right?
Yeah, I mean they say it's improves the stability, compatibility, and security of your Mac. It is recommended for all El Capitan users. So, I mean, I guess bug fixes and probably some security updates is what it seems like. Renee, I'm sure knows way more than I do. I'm assuming that it's literally probably just some security stuff and maybe a few bug fixes.
They're all, there's a new category I like to call whoopsies. It's like there's bug fixes, performance enhancements, and then things that they really screwed up previously that they have to quickly unscrew. So it's things like the iTunes update, and it's things like you can now use Night Shift, for example, when you're in low power mode, which is just something they hadn't had time to fix up.
This is an update, an unusual. In fact, Alex Lindsay, if we were here, would always counsel us, do not install the first update. Install the update to the update, because that's when they fix the whoopsies.
There's red. The code name, like, it's funny because people call these internally like red and blue updates. And red are like, oh my God, something's broken. Push the update fast, fast, fast. But that's a rushed update. So you never know what's going to break in that. So then the blue updates when they've had time to actually go, all right, settle down. Everybody take a deep drink. Now let's fix this. And then you get the blue
update. The big update. What are you laughing at?
No, we're talking about updates, and we're also talking about the wisdom of don't actually push the big red, the big button the until you're done. I want to quickly describe that I've got I'm looking at a screen that's plugged into my my MacBook Pro, which is my daily driver Mac. It's got a remote access window to the Mac Mini that drives drives Skype and does all the podcasting stuff from. So right now I am looking at in the corner of my MacBook window the upgrade to El Capitan notice that I've been looking at for the past 2 months, and in the smaller window, the updates available dialog box for the Mac Mini that has also been up for at least 4 or 5 days. That has, because it always pops up, where Andy, are you actually doing something you need to finish? Yes. Okay. Then we don't need to see that right now, do we? So
mine is supposed to run every night, but I always forget to turn off Photoshop, and then Photoshop wants a confirmation to close.
Now, Jason Clanthus is telling me do not do the iOS 9.3.2 update because it's got problems with the iPad Pros. So I guess what we should first say is while updates are always very important, we want to also report to you, as is our job, of any issues that are being caused by these updates. So should I not do this on my iPad Pro, Renee?
I didn't have any trouble. I have seen some. The thing is that there's so many people with so many devices now running in so many different configurations that even if it's 1% of people, that's still thousands of people who have an issue. I haven't had any problem with it. I installed it yesterday. Everything seems to be working fine, but that doesn't mean, the update for iPhone fixes the Bluetooth issues for iPhone SE that I never had, but, some other people did have. So it depends on what your pain is. If you currently have pain, the update might fix it. If you don't, wait a while. Let your friends try it out. Let us try it out. And then,
I think that's, I learned that lesson with the iOS update that broke the fingerprint reader. I was about to install it, and Jeff Needles, who worked for us and was an Apple aficionado, was always the first to install anything, screamed, "No!" Yeah. And that's why I stopped. I haven't heard any screams like that yet.
Okay, so here becomes my question, because at this point, Apple's turning on auto updates for everyone, right? So what happens when your auto update is pushed out and like you're just said, oh, go ahead and update this. Usually at that point, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, go ahead and install and everything will be fine.
Well, of protecting you, everybody, I'm going to download and install 9.3.2 on my iPad Pro.
Nice.
He's jumping on the grenade. He's jumping on the grenade.
And then I've already done it on El Capitan on OS 10. Now, I notice I have to go back through each time, even a point update like this, go back through kind of, okay, do you want to send diagnostics usage to Apple? Yes. Do you want to send crash data to Apple developers? Yes. Yeah. I hope I'm not going to have to log in again, because I really hate it when they make me log into iCloud again. Let's see. Setting up your Mac. Yeah. You can show there's this. It's okay. Setting up. Oh, too late. You missed it.
There are just a lot of different layers.
You did get kittens, so.
there are a lot of different layers to these kind of problems. Not only that, but you also have to be aware that this is a time where a lot, not just Apple, this is just in general, a lot of service providers and a lot of app makers will sneak new things into the terms of service that this has nothing to do with activating the fingerprint reading reader, but this is a really good time to, technically speaking, say we got your authorization to start selling marketing information about you to other people, because we buried that on page 21 of the new updated agreement. It's just something to be really, really careful about every time you see. We are in the habit of just pushing the OK button to move forward to the next thing. Google, as a matter of fact, they do a lot of A/B, actually A through triple Z testing. as they're pushing out new features. They found out, for instance, one feature in Gmail. The problem was that it was throwing up a dialog box that simply said, "Do you want this to happen? Okay." And people are just used to blindly clicking okay. They're seeing the dialog box as, "You have to click the okay button to make this thing go forward, and I really want this thing to go forward." Whereas it was presenting, here is an actual warning that we need to make you read. So instead of presenting it as an okay dialog, they would decide to present that information elsewhere and otherwise. But I did want to add one thing, though, to what we were talking about a second ago. I'm a little bit more of a risk taker when it comes to desktop operating systems than stuff on my phone. Stuff on my phone, I'm willing to be a whole issue behind for a month, because think about what happens if I lose Wi-Fi on my Mac. On my desktop Mac, well, it means that I'm tied into Ethernet, no problem. It'll be a bummer to not be able to use my notebook in the living room, but I'll get by. If my phone gets borked for any reason, God forbid, I'm in an airport, so now I don't know what my booking number information is. I don't have my boarding pass. I've just got a text message from my bank saying, "Oh, by the way, there's unusual activity in your account, so we've locked you down." And now I can't turn that back on again. I also can't move money into another account. I can't rebook a thing. You are totally screwed without your phone. So that's the one thing where I actually do make that try to do that mental thing where, what actual feature is being added with this update? And is this a feature that's relevant to me? I'm really conservative when it comes to updating my phone.
So, go ahead.
One thing worth adding is about the iCloud. It's that traditional battle between convenience and security. So there are updates where you don't have to log back into iCloud. And those are the ones where they never touch the iCloud chain throughout the process. But anytime they have to either flush it or they rewrite something over it, they can no longer prove that you are secure and connected and authorized for iCloud. They have to ask you again so they can generate that new token.
I once asked our security guy, Steve Gibson, whose show follows this one, why is Apple asking me for those passwords all the time? He says, "I don't know, but Apple's pretty good about this kind of stuff. If they're asking you for a password, it's because they have a scenario where not asking you for a password would be risky." So
they're fail secure.
They're not just doing it for, because they're smart. They're not stupid. And they're not just doing it because, it might be a good idea. They're doing it because there's a scenario that they're thinking about that they want to protect you against. So do it, even though I bitch and moan the whole way. Because I have, of course, as everyone should, a non-memorable, long, strong, totally random iCloud password that I have to look up on my, other computer and type in slowly by
hand. It
was
funny. I was on an Android podcast, which was a lot of fun, but they were complaining that Apple keeps asking for iCloud and they can never remember it. And I asked them what they did with Google, and they said, "Well, I made that easy to remember."
Big mistake.
It's the same thing.
Same thing. Because on the Chromebook, I have it set, and you don't have to have it set, but I have it set that you log in every time you open the Chromebook, which means, and you don't log in with a Chromebook password. See, a local password, I don't think has to be as secure because it's just your local password. They'd have to have physical access. But my Google password should darn well be secure. So I can memorize.
I turn that off on OS X because I don't want someone shoulder surfing me getting my login password. My online
good
password.
Point.
So
I've actually thought about that. I've kind of wished that the one password people or every single password generator would not just factor in how tough is this mathematically to break, but also how easy is it to people figure out what word you're typing or what sequence you're typing. If I for certain types of passwords, I use themes. They don't have to be as secure as my bank password, for instance, but for a message board or something like that, I will use a consistent theme that even though I change it every single month, there's something kind of similar to it. And sometimes as I'm picking something that I can remember, I'm realizing that, it looks like it. If someone were just glancing at what I'm typing, they would probably figure out at least one or two of these words because it's a very, very specific pattern. I think that some of the best passwords possible would be something that involves a lot of keys that are grouped close together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can't really see which of these eight possible
surreptitious shift key. I put a little surreptitious shift key action in there as well.
Or a blanket Edward Snowden. Put it over your head while you're typing.
If I'm in public, I type backspace and a lot. I do it, delete, back. And you can do it with your pinky. So I think you can obfuscate.
If, If I'm in public, I will actually just drop something. I will lower the lid of my notebook.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking about there are some passwords where I do that thing that no one ever figures out, which is I'm substituting some numbers for letters. But also I have to slow down to make sure I hit that one, which means that I'm not typing at my usual 380 characters per second. It's like now, I can actually see this person. He's typing.
So what you want Donald, really, you don't want to do is go
metaphor.
D, three.
Louder, please.
we should all be using random passwords generated by 1Password.
I agree.
We are imperfect vessels for the perfection of the universe, unfortunately.
I use, I shouldn't say this because I'm reducing my security, but I use song lyrics for passwords. And then I transform them. I don't take the song lyrics. In fact, I often get the lyrics wrong, so that's even better.
I use like 3 or 4 different languages.
Yeah, because I'm bad at song lyrics, so it's a perfect password mnemonic for me because no one's ever going to guess it. But I sometimes make the mistake of humming the song while I'm typing in the password. That is not. Okay, that would be a bad
Stairway
idea.
Stairway to heaven.
Yeah, da, 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 and she's buying. So I have now updated El Capitan. Apparently a long list of security flaws fixed on this. This is well worth doing, yes?
Yeah, no, I looked that up, and it looked like the CVEs that it's updating are all kinds of stuff. So that's a good update.
Do it.
Yeah. Definitely do it.
Is it also available for Yosemite, Andy? Yes, I think so, or you wouldn't be seeing it, right?
I think so.
You're not upgraded yet.
Not yet, no.
Yeah.
I don't want to say for sure because I haven't tested it. Security patches do tend to be, unless it's something where there was a huge change of infrastructure, they do tend to be pretty OS unspecific.
Right, they go all the way down.
Because usually they're updating one specific library or one specific command line tool that they can put on just about anywhere. So, yeah.
Also, update for GarageBand and iTunes. And we'll talk about both of those in just a little bit. My iPad now is reboot. I'm done with El Capitan. It seems to be working. Of course, I can't be sure till I try every program and launch 100 tabs. But so far, so good. It was only a 93 megabyte download for iOS. So I always feel like that's less likely to be problematic. It's dumb because you could have a bug in 1 byte.
It's getting better at making those updates smaller.
Yeah. 93 is not bad. That's a quick update. And then we'll talk about iTunes. I want to, because we also have to update the you're deleting it wrong story a little bit.
Nobody knows, Leo.
No one knows. Even Apple, apparently.
Apple does not know. This is,
That's the irony of it, isn't it? Hold that thought, because I want to take a break. But we're going to come back, and Christina Warren is here from Mashable. And I'm just thrilled to get you on, Christina. I know you're busy. We're going to run through this show as fast as we can because Christina's got somewhere to be in an hour. You're busy at Mashable, aren't you? Are you doing a lot of video now?
I'm doing a lot of video now. And good. Yeah, we're just rocking and rolling. So yeah, lots of stuff coming up. And so it's good.
It's a good opportunity for you. That's what I like
good,
to hear.
Good news for Mashable.
Yeah, you know what?
Thank you, Andy.
You're exactly right. They are damn lucky to have you. We're damn lucky to have you on this show right now, as with Renee Ritchie. Totes. Always glad to have you from iMore.com.
Sir.
You're my go-to guy. If I think, what's the problem? Is there a problem with this update? Who do I think? I think iMore, right?
Yeah.
Is Apple deleting my music? I think iMore. That's where you go. Good for that stuff.
Can I say one thing, because the perfect metaphor just occurred to me and I have to use it? It's like I feel as though like iMore and Mashable are kind of like the good old days of the New York Post and the New York Daily News, like in the 50s and 60s, where it's like they cultivate and attract really, really great columnists and editors. And it seems like every 2 or 3 years, the Daily News says, okay, we'll give Christina more money to get her away from Mashable. And then someone says, you know what? If they're going to take Christina, we're going to double whatever Serenity Caldwell is getting paid for iMore. We're going to double their salary. We're going to get it for Mashable. I would like to think that 8 years from now, the 3 or 4 best people from both are each getting like $800,000 a year, because each of you will keep poaching each other's best talent, because you've got such great people on both staffs.
Looking for the Daily Bugle. Where's that Daily Bugle? That's the one we want.
Daily Bugle, yeah, that'd be good.
Strategic shaving, you can do that.
Also, Andy Anako, the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you, when I told Andy the sponsors for today's show, he said, oh, good, Audible. Andy's always got an Audible pick. We're going to get to his pick in a bit. But let me explain why you want an Audible pick, because I'm going to give you a free book at audible.com/MacBreak. It's the goal. What is Audible? Oh. Gee, I thought everybody knew. Audible is the best audio bookstore in the world, my friend. 250,000 downloadable type titles. Fiction, nonfiction, mysteries, science fiction, self-help, how-to, technology, biography, all of it. Including, by the way, performances, the Great Courses series, which means you could take all of those lectures. And it could be part of your subscription. So we're going to get you the gold subscription, which is a credit a month. 99.5% of all the books are one credit. A few of the very long books are more than one credit. So you'd save up. But they're long, so they get you through a couple of months. You also get the Daily Digest with your subscription of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. And the nice thing is this is a 30-day trial. So you pay nothing for that first month or that first book. Cancel at any time. Pay no fee, but you'll get to keep the book. And then once you're a member, I think you'll see all sorts of other things. The real hardship is, you know, every month, what do I read next? It's so much fun. There's so many choices. That's why we give Andrew Anatko his chance to pick the Audible Book of the Week.
This is one that I've been saving up. It's Joel Grey. You know him. He created the iconic role in the Master of Ceremonies on Cabaret. Yeah. And he's just done a really good theatrical memoir. It's called Master of Ceremonies by Joel Grey. Read, of course, by the author. And every time you have a stage performer reading his or her own audiobook, you've got 9 hours of stage performance, and nice. That will get you through housekeeping. That will get you through your constitutional, your jog. It'll get you through everything. And I like to sort of, I've got a long and difficult audiobook next that I've already bought it. It's queued up. It's like 40 hours and the sort of thing where you have to listen really carefully and focus on characters and interlocking storylines. So it's great to have a memoir like this, which is a really nice, engaging personal story, because not only has he spent a life in the theater, but he comes from a very interesting background. And also, even though he's in his 80s right now, the book also talks about the unusual step of coming out as a gay man when you're elderly and you're already quite famous and you're wondering. I have to admit that when that news came out, I was like, why when you're 81, 82 would you finally make that step? Because
he's got nothing to lose now.
I was going to say I'm completely ignorant. I do not know why.
Well, he grew up in an era, and I think it's still somewhat true, where as a performer you had to be closeted. You couldn't be a leading man, right?
Yeah, but being in a I'll let him tell the story inside the book. It's really really interesting, just start to finish. So I'm also, again, just listening to Joel Grey speak to you for 8 or 9 hours. It's great stuff.
Great stuff. History, fiction. I love the showbiz biographies, and he's led me to quite a few of those. Here's the deal. Go to audible.com and pick your first book. Then go to audible.com/MacBreak and sign up for the gold account. That book will be yours for free. Ooh, dearie, The Remarkable Life of Julia Child. You know, I'm kind of on a Julia Child kick because I'm reading A Year in France right now. And actually, Lisa and I are reading this together. We look now for books we can read as a couple. We both have our own subscriptions, so we have our own books. But then we have some My Life in France, that's it. We have our own, and then we have books that we listen to together. And this is because we're both Francophiles, we both love food, and we both love Julia Child. We're listening to this together, and it's so great. It's a memoir of Julia Child's life in France. For Francophiles, nothing better. Anyway, you could see the problem. It's hard to pick the first book, but just get started. You'll see. Audible.com/MacBreak. Somebody was saying, how do I get the Chinese instruments? I've opened up the new GarageBand, and you have to create a new GarageBand track and then go to Sound Library, and you'll see you can download Essential Sounds. Can you show this, Carson? Download Essential Sounds or download all available sounds. So I'm downloading Essential Sounds. Look, there's a lot of new stuff. Bass, drum kit, guitar.
There's loops and all sorts of stuff.
But here's all the Chinese traditional stuff. This is it just really shows you how interested Apple is in getting that Chinese market. Not that these aren't great things to have. In fact, you know, many musicians love having the kind of the inspiration to innovate that comes from having new instruments and new sounds. So
I watched a bunch of those Wuxia, the martial hero movies when I was a kid, and they always had these fantastic scores. It just sounds so different than anything else you get in like Western movies or Western opera. And everything from the Red Junk Opera to the Peking Opera, it's just magnificent. The sound is so different. And now you can experiment with them. And like you said, it'll lead to a whole bunch of fusions that weren't just available on your laptop while you were traveling before.
It is the Apple's GarageBand is a heck of a – it's free, right? If you buy a Mac,
it's
you
free.
Get it?
Yeah, it's free.
These loops, I've also – my son is loves this stuff. So I got him Logic Pro and I bought a ton of loops. And I've spent hundreds of dollars on music loops.
Yeah.
And Apple's giving you, I don't know how many, a ton of them, totally for free.
It was super interesting to see Susan Prescott. She's the vice president of marketing for Apple's apps. She runs all the apps in Apple marketing. And she got the quote in the press release, which I really like because it shows that they're like, this is not just, an executive on down thing. They really want to make these apps for everybody. And China's such a huge market for them.
You don't just get a nice vintage B3 organ. You get seven different styles of vintage B3 organ out of here. Bebop, classic rock, grand organ, heavy metal organ, jazz organ, lighter shade organ, and tone wheel organ.
I think that speaks to the bench strength of the people that they have working inside there, because they're people. It's not just engineers who have learned about music. They hire musicians. I remember the story about Paul Schaefer's autobiography, talking about how he would, as a man in his 20s, like working gig to gig, he would sort of sneak over when he knew that a legendary blues keyboardist was playing, because he would want to see how he's got the organ set up, like what the slider settings on, so he can duplicate that sound. So I'm sure we're seeing a lot of that in these instruments.
Let me play a little D. What is this? D minor. That's E. Can you hear it? You can't hear it. It's so low you can't hear it. I went all the way to the lowest octave.
Listen to that sustain. If it were playing, you could hear it.
I don't know, man. No, something's going on now. I can't play anymore. I was playing. Oh, well, really cool. And, cancel. You know, it's going to take you a while and some considerable disk space to download all of the loops, because they give you gigabytes worth of free loops. It's really awesome. Really great. No, it's me, I think, because I'm not seeing the, I don't know what's going on. All right. Now we get to iTunes, because so first of all, we talked last week, and I want to kind of not blame the user. It's really easy to. And so I was really quick to say, I'm not going to blame Jim Dalrymple, knows what he's talking about. I'm not going to blame, I don't know, James Pinkstone. But if a user says, look, I did this and Apple deleted my music, I'm not going to assume that that's the error on the user's part. We certainly, and you showed this, Serenity showed it, Jason Snell tweeted it, there are very confusing dialogues that could easily cause you to inadvertently delete your music, and I think that's likely that that's what happened.
Cause the woman who created the program to delete their music.
Yeah. So it's likely, it's not, but nevertheless, Apple, I'm actually thrilled with Apple's statement, which is, we're not going to blame the user. They said we can't reproduce it, but we're going to keep trying because a very small number of people are reporting this, and we're not going to assume that it's their error. We're going to make sure that, because it could be a bug in iTunes. We really don't know. They did say even though they couldn't find the bug and couldn't reproduce it, they are going to make iTunes safer, and that's this release, right?
Right.
So what is safer? Do we know yet?
I don't think we know yet. I assume, and this is probably based on a lot of Serenity's reporting and Jason Snell too, is that they are making those dialog boxes much more clear when you're actually deleting something. And I think that's something that's necessary, right? Like you, I don't want to immediately go to the blame the user's place. Although at the same time, it did seem like this was a circumstance where something was deleted, maybe not intentionally, but certainly not without clicking some sort of dialogue. But it should be very clear when you're deleting something off of your computer, if it's removing it from your iCloud library, that it's going to be lost and gone forever, that this is actually, you really want to do this. I mean, that's a circumstance where you should probably have a second dialogue box. Are you really sure you want to delete this from iCloud? I mean, that might be annoying if you're trying to remove a duplicate album, but make it an annoyance that way rather than having someone risk losing, years and years worth of music from their library.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it really is a systematic problem because, you know, Trinity explained this really, really well. You have a primary Mac, which is the Mac with your music library, which you uploaded to where Apple Music matched off of when you first set it up, or iTunes matched off of. And it has physical versions of your albums on it and your songs on it. But then you might have a MacBook as well, and you're traveling, and it only has Apple Music versions of those songs. So if you delete the song there, it's just removing the record to Apple Music, but that is essentially gone, and you no longer see any tracks on that. Where on your primary machine, if you delete it, maybe you're just deleting the Apple Music reference, maybe you're deleting the physical file, maybe it's moving to trash. There's just so many states that it becomes almost where you want to fall down on the floor in a fetal position and just say, make it simpler.
Well, in honor of Jim Dalrymple, I've downloaded Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution. And so it was downloaded. It was a match song. It's downloaded now. And now what would we like to do to simulate these? Should I just try to delete it?
Yeah, try to delete it.
It's matched.
Yeah.
All right. So let me now there's two choices, by the way, which immediately is confusing. Remove, download, and delete.
Yeah, because remove, download is like a cache.
Remove, download, exactly. Remove, download would remove it from the cache, but keep it in your library, whereas delete.
Well, wait a minute. I don't know. Is that the case? So if I remove, download, now I don't have the song anymore.
It's still in your library, and if you double tap, if you click on it, it'll still play.
I don't think so. Remove download. Now you're saying if I double tap this, it'll play?
If you double click it, it'll still play. It'll now stream it from the cloud.
Well, it's streaming it though. Okay.
Yeah. It'll stream it. Yeah.
So I am gonna download it now. So that's different because now it's on the hard drive. In fact,
I could now show in Finder,
and I would see
a song. It'll show the physical file.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back here. Now I'll take the other thing, which is delete. Are you sure you want to delete this copy of the selected song? The song can still be played, but will be deleted from any devices that synchronize with this computer. So this is new, I think, right? This is a new dialog box. And then there's a checkbox that says also hide this song.
Yeah.
Hiding it will hide it from my available downloads.
Still not intuitive.
Yeah.
Still not intuitive. So if you delete it, then I think without hiding it, I think it'll now remove the file. But
how is that different from remove download?
Remove download just means it won't locally be stored.
All right, I'm going to delete the song. Oh, do you want to move the selected song to the trash or keep it in the iTunes media folder? Okay, you see the confusion here because I thought I was deleting it, and now it's saying you could keep it in your iTunes media folder.
Right,
what am I deleting it from?
You're deleting it from Apple Music.
That's not what I want. I wanted to delete it from my computer.
Well,
okay.
That's the case, then you just remove the file physically. You remove download. That's what
or
you do.
Or you did delete and they say move to trash and then empty your trash.
I see
which
the
is
problem yeah. right here.
but if you do that, if you move to trash and empty trash, Renee, then that will actually still remove it from iCloud. So if you
wait
want
a minute.
To keep it
so if I okay, so I okay,
like
I'm gonna
C colon backslash.
If I delete this, okay, so if it's not downloaded, it just says it will hide it from your iTunes purchases. That makes sense. Now I'm gonna delete it. If I delete this song, move it to the trash. It's looks the same as if I said remove download.
Not delete it again, Leo. Delete it again.
But if I delete it again, what happens? It'll hide it. But it can download it again.
Yeah, because it's matched. So you'll but now you won't keep your original DRM-free copy. You will get, if you're not using iTunes, if you're using iTunes Match, I think you will still get your iTunes Match version. Otherwise,
that's interesting.
The Apple Music.
And that's another, okay, now I have two copies of the song, even though I thought I'd moved it to the trash. And one of them is copy protected and one of them is not. Maybe. No, and they're not. Neither one is because I use Match. I don't use Apple Music.
Can we just drive your computer over to Craig Federighi's house and let him look at it over
there? Had I had iTunes Music, this would be an M4P, not an M4A.
If you were in Apple Music and you also did not subscribe to iTunes Match, if you subscribe to iTunes Match and Apple Music, I believe, and Renee, correct me if I'm wrong on this,
but I feel
pretty confident in this. If you subscribe to both, iTunes Match supersedes the iTunes Music stuff. And the only way that you have iTunes Music files downloaded is if it is something that you added to your library from Apple Music and you download that, it's not something that you purchased or uploaded. That will be protected. But if it's anything.
So the reason, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Protected files are so that when you stop subscribing to Apple Music, you don't have a copy you can play.
Completely, yeah. Exactly right.
Otherwise, is, you would have right. unprotected music if you paid for Match.
You would just subscribe for 30 days for free or 90 days or whatever, download all the music you want, and then unsubscribe, and then, oh, I've got all these free copies. The problem is that because they still offer the separate Match service, which is $25 a year, which people like I pay for that because I want a DRM-free copy of all my music in the cloud. So that's why I pay that money. I don't really care about the matching so much as I want to upload music from... that I've purchased maybe from Amazon, maybe from Google. I want to have it in iTunes available on all my devices. If I did not pay for that matching service and I just paid for Apple Music, Apple Music would still match those files and they put them in the cloud. But when I left the service, it would take all those files with it. So if you don't want to lose any copies of your files that you've uploaded to the cloud to DRM, you have to pay $25 a year for iTunes Match.
Now, just to make things even crystal clear, what I just did, and that's all right. I've done, I now have three copies of Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution. One in my trash,
yep.
Two on my hard drive, and one is the one in the trash. Oddly, is the one with a one in the name, which is it seems like anyway. I can't forget it.
See, the problem is there's just so many states. Like you can have
I understand.
Music that you own.
It's not completely Apple's fault. It's
well, it, no,
it's,
it is.
It's complicated.
It is. They've because allowed they these states. The system.
Yeah.
And you can have stuff you've added to Apple Music but not downloaded, things you've added and downloaded, things that you've matched, things that you've matched to Apple Music. And then having to remove all these things is reversing all those states, which is it's just like any complex systems.
Here's a crazy idea. Just go with me on this, guys. What if rather than trying to replicate some sort of weird iTunes database library in the cloud that has all these states and syncs things with your devices, what if you just were able to upload all your music to iCloud and then access them from all your devices? And if you delete it from iTunes, it still keeps it in iCloud unless you actually go into iCloud itself and delete it. What if we did that? Wouldn't that be easier?
You're describing my relationship with Amazon Music that I feel
Yes.
Exactly. I have a lot of cloud services that work, and all of them are based on that model. Just yesterday, I was listening to 8 hours worth of music. It was all being hosted by my house cloud off of my NAS, with some music coming from my iPad, but mostly here is the truthful version of my music library that's being fed through an app. And there just never needs to be any question about where the source of a music file is coming from. If it's as simple as a simple AB switch that says, or if the window view actually rotates around visually 180 degrees to say, you are now looking at the truth of your library as I see it on the cloud. Okay, well, let's revolve it around. Okay, now you're looking at actual files that are on here. So if you delete a file with this view, realize that you are looking at an actual storage device that you're deleting files from, not here is some place where I'd like to be able to access this file from. This is the sort of thing where a lot of the new services, I think, do music a lot better than the old services because they have the ability to simply start from scratch and decide what makes sense in this world in which people have a very, very malleable idea of what the source of a music file is.
No, I think you're exactly correct.
Windows. Help me.
No, I mean, totally. I mean, it's just to me, though, it just seems insane that, you know, we have iCloud and iTunes Match is a separate service from iCloud. Apple Music is a separate service from iCloud. Why not make iTunes Match an iCloud part of it? You can even count it against my iCloud storage. I can upload all my music to iCloud. It'll be stored there. The only way it gets removed from my library for real is if I, like you say, Andy, I go into iCloud and I do it. When that's how it works in Amazon. Amazon makes me go into their web interface and actually delete those files. But if I delete it from the app or something else, it's not getting rid of it. It's just saying, okay, now it's locally not stored anymore. And I mean, I wrote a story last week how to fix Apple Music, and one of those ways was separating it from iTunes. And I feel like that's a big part of it, right? Like they need to like make it very clear if this is an iCloud, this is an iCloud, but the libraries need to be separate because it's becoming too complex and people are getting too confused. And you have a situation where we're on this show, we're all very Mac savvy people, and we're getting confused by what these options are. If we're getting confused, I can't even imagine someone who's coming at this without, you know, lots of time, backup strategies, and patience. I can't even imagine what their perspective is.
Yeah, the thing for me that would really help with this is if, you know, exactly that happened, but then people will run out of iCloud storage because they're putting photos in there. So it needs some sort of front-end, really friendly interface. So your device is out of storage, or iCloud is out of storage, you've exceeded your iCloud limit, you press a button and you're presented with a really easy to navigate. And people have done this work before. We know how to present this data. Here's where all your iCloud storage is. Here's your music. Here's your photos. Click into this. You can go in. You can delete stuff you want to delete. Yep. And just let you manage that stuff. And then you don't have to worry about people running out of storage anymore either.
The hard truth we need to confront is that this isn't like every single country with an Air Force in 1952 trying to, or whatever year it was before the sound barrier was breached, trying to breach the sound barrier. Other companies not only have done this, but they've done it routinely. So So Apple needs to, if Apple's going to solve this problem, it's going to have to ask itself, why are much less funded and much less experienced companies than we able to solve this problem, but we're not? They have to basically decide. They have to start from this sounds harsh, but I'm speaking in the broadest sense. Oftentimes, the only way to solve a really big problem that you personally have been trying to solve is to start from a place of utter humility and say, I'm going to sit cross-legged in the middle of an empty room, and I'm going to say, I know nothing. I have no experience, and every idea that I have had about this is of no value whatsoever. I'm going to look at the problem, and I'm going to look at the pieces I have available, and I'm going to build a new solution to the problem, assuming that nothing that I think is the right idea is necessarily the right idea. That's the only way that Apple's going to solve this.
This is not the rumored update to iTunes that we're going to see at WWDC. This is right?
No.
How much, I mean, so it would make sense maybe that they would do a little bit here and then really address the problem with a complete update and revision.
I hate to be that guy, because it's so easy to sit here and just say they need, I would just say do a do-over. Make Apple Music its own thing. Use it an opportunity to launch all new music apps that are like these music startups that let you take all the baggage that is iTunes and people syncing on Windows with iPod shuffles and leave them with iTunes and slowly phase that out and start with this wonderful new app the way you did with Final Cut and iWork and all that. I don't have to manage that whole business, so it's easy for me to say, but I think that's the opportunity here. And that they're hesitant, I understand, because Apple very seldom has to worry about moving hundreds of millions of people through platforms. Usually it's much fewer than that, and they can be really harsh. But it seems like that we're getting down to where that is the way that you have to fix this.
No, I agree. You have to separate the two. I mean, when I was thinking about that, when I was writing my piece last week about that, that was the conclusion I kept coming to. And what I kept thinking about was, yes, you probably will have to reproduce functionality, because if you have a new Apple Music app, you do still need to have it talk to your iTunes library so that you can see your local files or your iCloud files or whatever. And that's fine. That's completely okay. So you can reproduce functionality. So I might be able to play, you know, music that I own in two places. That's, to me, an acceptable compromise to the reality, which is right now you've got one, you know, albatross of an app that is terrible, that does not work for anyone, that is confusing, that is making people not clear what's being removed and what's not. And if you move everyone to a new app, I mean, that's still talking to your iTunes library, you know, that can still exist. You can kind of start over, as you're saying. And that's something that Google, Amazon, Microsoft, you know, Spotify, Plex, you know, insert name of music service here can do, probably even Tidal. You know, I mean, like literally everybody has been able to do a better job with this than Apple. And I think that's because they've been so afraid of letting go of iTunes, and that's understandable. But the only way that this is going to get better is if we start to, you know, the only way you fix the problem is if you start to extricate it from itself. So we've got to start taking this thing apart.
Well, I think we're all in agreement that something should happen. I think it's difficult to know exactly what, but
I'll tell you again. Yesterday, I spent the entire day listening to music. It was not even Spotify. It wasn't even Google Music. It was actually the streaming music app that works with my Synology disk station. We're not talking about even a company that does that does music for a living. It's just people. If someone has a folder with music files on it, we will give you an application for your iPad that will let you create playlists and find playlists. And as I'm listening to this music, I'm realizing that I am enjoying this simple app way more than I ever enjoyed iTunes in the past 3 or 4 years. That seems like a really significant point, that I've got probably 6 different apps on my iOS devices that can play music, and iTunes is absolutely number five on that list, to the extent that I would much rather have a web app hosted elsewhere than use iTunes. I don't hate it. There's no hate involved. There's just, this is, if I have options to using iTunes, I will always use that option. And that is a chilling thought about an Apple product.
What's a better app or program for Macintosh if you didn't want to use iTunes? I mean, one of the problems is that once iTunes came out, they bought the number one music player app, and then all the other guys kind of got out of the business. I own Vox. You like Vox?
I like Vox. I mean, it's not going to be as full featured. It's not as great with playlists, but it's good. It plugs into SoundCloud. It plugs into Last.fm. It'll play local stuff. It'll also play from your iTunes library if you want it to do that. I think that's a good app. VLC actually is a decent choice, I think, for some people.
A lot of people use VideoLand. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was looking into this last week. I was trying to give somebody some advice on something and about what app to use in place of iTunes. And it's hard because you're right. You know, there used to be apps. What was DVD John's app that used to Double Twist? Double Twist, which was great.
You know, is that gone?
It's gone. So there are a lot of these things that don't exist anymore. But Vox is still around, and that's a pretty good player.
Vox has another advantage, which is you can play higher bitrate music.
Yeah, it sure can. It sure can.
So Christine, can I ask you a question? Are you a regular Vox user?
I am.
Okay, I had it running for months and months because I think I actually had it as a pick of the week like last year or something, and I liked it for it's a nice, simple, clean player. But then it started doing something I couldn't get it to turn off, and I actually screenshotted it because I thought I might be imagining it that I'd be working, productivity, creativity, and I said, oh, alert box. What's the alert box? Vox is saying, hey, why don't you take a break and listen to just one song? And I said, no, I'm working. And you've got me to stop working to try to entice me to knock off work. I couldn't find. It sounds like it is funny. I'm not trying, but I was annoyed by that, and I couldn't figure out how to turn it off, and I got so frustrated that I tried to uninstall the program, and the dialogues are still coming up.
Well, this is one of the problems with Vox is they have a service called Loop that replace and unless you subscribe to that. Do you subscribe to that?
I don't know. I subscribe to everything else, but I do not subscribe to Loop.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically replacing iTunes Match and iTunes Storage. I just want to use it as a plain old player.
Yeah. Then that's what I use it for. And I don't use the phone app. Use Sessium on my phone. But here's a question for you guys, because this is actually a bigger concern. Do you know of any apps that make it possible to sync songs to your phone with other than iTunes? You know, are there good apps? I mean, I know PhoneView, iXplore used to kind of let you do that, but
I'm disappointed. Double Twist went away. That's what I used. It's gone.
You know what I was going to say? I believe it's the same company that has they're focusing on Android development.
Right.
So they used to be the iOS. My favorite music player, and people always hate it when I talk about things that aren't iPhone, but the same makers have made an app called Cloud Player, the really specific thing. And all it is it's a really nicely designed, easy to use music player that just simply asks you, here is every cloud service known to humanity. Where is your music library? Is it on Dropbox? Great, we will hook up to your Dropbox. Is it on your Google Drive? Great, we'll put it there. And it basically means that you are responsible for putting files in a place where I, the music player, can see it. But once I can see it, I will organize it. I will organize it into playlists, into people, into albums, stuff like that. And anytime you update it, I will either update that database manually, or I'll do it automatically. But you are just, I will not see anything that you don't put into this directory. But once it's there, every device that is running this app will be able to see it. And it's $6, and it's one of the best. I would almost like to run an Android virtualization window on my iPad. If that's a feature of Android N, being able to basically do a remote screen sharing on Android, I would buy a Nexus phone, keep it plugged in and running, just so I could run this music player on all of my iOS devices.
Andy.
I know. I'm brilliant. I have such perfect taste. Thank you for. I don't want to say it. I just want to acknowledge it. I'm sure I'm only saying what every single iOS user is now saying. My God, I agree with Andy every time.
We're like, we really want to virtualize Android on our phones. No, but you make a good point. I mean, but it is ridiculous, though, that we're willing to go through all these hoops just to avoid using iTunes, is I think really what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I have to say, is I've used Vox mostly because I have high-res music, but if I were forced to use it all the time, I might hate it as much as I do iTunes. This is a hard thing to do well.
It is. I mean, I have to say, even though their desktop player has leaves something to kind of be desired, I kind of both enjoy Google Play's implementation, but also Amazon, actually. I think mm-hmm. Amazon, even though I don't
you do
love,
that on the web, right?
You do it on the web, but they have like a desktop app, which is kind of terrible, but it works okay. The web app is actually pretty
good.
The
web app, to me, is everything I want for Google anyway.
Google, it's on the web, and somebody has made a Mac wrapper. I think there are a few things on GitHub where they've built Google Play things. On the web, I think it's fine. Amazon's desktop app is kind of terrible, but at the same time, it works pretty well. It has a good search for their library. If you're a Prime user, you know, you have access to that stuff. I mean, there are some alternatives. If you're willing to not use Apple as your cloud, and you don't have to use Apple as your cloud, there are all these other services that will let you do that, including things like Synology and Plex and other tools. There are some things you can do. The problem is, of course, you know, there's nothing as easy as iTunes, and you know, but I think for a lot of power users, a lot of us are looking at, or not even power users, but just people who don't have time to deal with iTunes. We're looking at alternatives and going, you know, maybe I will move all of my music, all my playlists, everything that I've been doing from this one app, this one library, to something else.
I'll tell you why Google works, because it was cloud first.
Totally.
So I go to music.google.com, and because I have already uploaded all my music to Google, I can look at my music library, and I have all my songs. Can you show this, please? I have all my songs in the Google Music Library. I can listen to them without downloading them. You know, they're all there. But I can also, and then it incorporates all of the Google streaming stuff. So Google has like Apple Music style music solution, and they bought songs and stuff. So there's the radio, there's the playlists, you know, there's. And I feel like this, because it started in the cloud, it never had to deal with this whole notion of, in fact, it doesn't even acknowledge that you have music stored on your computer.
No.
You play it from the cloud.
You can cache it, but you don't have to manage it or pay attention to it particularly,
right?
Wouldn't it be great if it synced with Google Photos, and that way, whenever you looked at a picture, it played the music you were listening at the time you took that photo,
cool.
And just Google
it's
memory.
It's only a matter of time.
That'd be a cool project.
Yeah.
Wait 24 hours.
Yeah.
They got the keynote. Yeah. They already released the big app that could have taken up 20 minutes of that. But yeah, I look. There is a plugin. If you subscribe to Google Music, it's just a plugin that you have on your desktop that it just keeps the cloud library synced with your iTunes library. And because for all of the faults of the Amazon MP3 app, it will also, every time you buy Amazon Music, automatically download it and put
it.
Exactly. So basically, every time I buy something on Amazon MP3, that app automatically downloads it, and then the Google Helper automatically puts it into Google Music.
Totally. So you got double backups.
Yep.
Exactly. It's like triple backups. You got the local
automation.
And I've also got like something running on my NAS that automatically keeps the NAS version of the library backed up to there. I think that's the reason why I haven't had one of those really horrible experiences with Apple Music, because they
Same.
Would. Tim Cook would have to really hate me in order for iTunes to actually delete every copy of a music file I have.
Aren't you one utility away from a complete circle, Andy, where every music file is duplicating to every service in perpetuity?
I am with my photos. Absolutely.
You added it here, and then it just re-adds that same photo forever.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the singularity of Diana Damrow albums, where every device becomes a something that can host and play a Diana Damrow.
Is that a third-party app? I thought Google made an app that would. I know Amazon makes an auto-uploader. Google doesn't make an auto-uploader.
No, that's Google Music.
It's an app from them, right?
Yeah. It'll actually appear in the toolbar.
Yeah. So that's really. I mean, you can do it also in the web, but I mean, it's really handy to have. Something looking at your iTunes library and syncing it and make it with that's not iTunes. So no matter what happens,
one way syncing, the idea that it will never ever delete anything from a locally hosted library. It will simply copy things from it to an offsite library. Well, and then whatever you do to that library,
maybe Apple's considering that, because we've seen the rumor, although denied by Apple, that they're going to eliminate in the next couple of years downloads. I mean, really, a lot of the problems Apple has is because it's legacy, right? It's supporting iTunes has to support all these old ways of doing things.
Yeah, they deny that they're going to be getting rid of downloads. And I honestly think that it's too soon for them to be talking about that. I mean, at some point, if the revenue costs are lower than the upkeep costs, maybe they'll consider it. But I honestly can't see them getting rid of offering downloads or whether they're old purchases or new purchases, because why cut off a revenue stream that's working for you?
Yeah. Generation Z is going to rebel and decide they want to own their music again. And the service that still provides downloads will be a differentiator for that, you know, new hipster
those
generation.
Days are gone.
But also you have to think, actually, you know, I've been mentioning twice now that I'm doing the basic burn the entire my house down to the ground.
Go all the way, man. Might as well.
The big house cleaning. And I've got a stack. I'm not going to go and get it, but literally this high of still shrink wrapped CDs that I bought from Amazon buying the CD. Because sometimes there's this, I'm about to buy an album, MP3 album for like $10, and there's a little sidebar when I'm about to buy. So, oh, by the way, we can sell you the physical CD for $8, and that will automatically deposit all the MP3s into your account.
So you never need to rip it.
Exactly. So I'm listening to the album, and then 2 days later, when I get, oh, that's right. Now I have Adele's new album, which I will then put. What,
one more thing to move.
Instead of a tape drive, Leo, this is a new offsite backup.
So I'm sorry. So
that's, by the way, why I buy music on Amazon, because it's a kind of an automatic way to get it, right?
Getting all the 8 tracks from Amazon.
Yeah.
I have to say that it would also be, and I agree with Christina. I doubt that there's a financial incentive for them to like go to streaming only, but also
they may be under pressure from the record industry to do that, though.
Well, I think the record industry would not want to do that.
They wouldn't want to do that.
No, especially not the indies.
Because they like that $10. Yeah, you're right.
Totally.
Yeah. But I also have to admit that would have to be like, imagine an electric car company failing to produce a car with range of greater than 120 miles and then saying, okay, we're just going to say that this is a 120 mile car, as opposed to saying it would be terrible to make that statement that we do not know how to do this, or we don't philosophically, we can't adjust our thinking to sell and serve music the way that almost everybody else does it. It's not possible for them to go ahead and say that, because I know that they can do it. I'm not angry with you, Apple. I'm just slightly disappointed, but I know that, Slugger, you're going to pick yourself up and you're going to make an even better music service than ever
and
before.
Remember, Apple has someone whose official job title is Jimmy, and he probably is not too keen on annihilating the download business.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess that would be kind of silly, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I'd love to hear that. I'd like to hear him in that conference room when someone announces that.
Right. No, totally. About him saying, what? We're getting rid of downloads. I think the idea is that at some point, you know, in the future, streaming revenue will, it's for Apple and the whole industry, will far outstrip digital sales. But you have to think they still sell vinyl, and you have to think that, you know, there will still be people and artists who want to distribute, not just strictly through streaming services. And so it helps when you are the number one music marketplace to still continue to be a music marketplace. So I mean, we're talking 5 years down the line, a lot of things could be different by then. But I think even bringing up the idea that they're going to be stopping doing that at this stage is far too early.
You've heard Dueling Banjos, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Cook, and it's Dueling Baiyin, a little Chinese music to take us out as we take a break. It's good on the gong. See, I love this.
Chenghao.
I think it's great music.
Hey, Chenghao.
It takes a little getting used to because it's dissonant to the Western ear, but I think it sounds great. And look at the play. He's playing it.
God, they're so close to having a theremin. do they have a theremin? If not, they need to have one.
They invented the theremin, a non-electronic theremin. Yeah, I think some of the Chinese instruments, they don't have frets, so it is very fluid. There you go.
Don't blame me.
Get down.
Dueling Baiyin. Our show, and we're going to talk about Didi Chuxin, the new ride-sharing. Apple put $1 billion into that, and then Warren Buffett put $1 billion into Apple. So it all, you know.
But Warren Buffett paid for Didi is what we're saying.
That's what happened. Yeah, there. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Great panel. Christina Warren from Mashable, from iMore, Renee Ritchie, and Mr. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times. We're talking Apple. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. A lot of you I know work in IT. It's one of the reasons people watch our shows. They're trying to glean information about their jobs from it. There's actually, I hate to say it, but there's a more efficient way to do this. IT Pro TV. It's like Twit, but for the IT professional or the aspiring IT professional. IT Pro TV really started that way. Two IT trainers, Don and Tim, wanted to do something that would be a little more engaging, a little more fun for people who are trying to get those certs to pass those tests. They created IT Pro TV. Now they're beating me. They got two studios. They do 50 hours of new content every week, more than 1,000 hours online already in every possible subject, including, yes, Apple certified technical coordinator, Apple support professional, Mac integration basics, Mac management basics. They just completed their CISA, globally recognized certification in the field of audit, control, and security of information systems. The CISA course was with Brian O'Hara. You've, I'm sure, seen his Cybex classic books on this. Adam Gordon is back for CEH, the Certified Ethical Hacker, version 9 of that cert. I want that cert. I would never try to get a job with it, but I just like to say I'm a certified ethical hacker. I put it on the wall, man. I put it on my business cards. June courses include CCNA Security, that's Cisco, a VCP6, that's VMware. They cover the waterfront in IT. So whether you're trying to get a job in IT and you need those certs and you want to get ready for the tests, or you already have a job and you want to keep your skills tuned up, this is the place. They've got virtual machine labs. You can build a Windows server and client system without even owning a single Windows machine. And you know the nice thing about that, you make a mistake, you close the browser window. You're done. Transcender practice exams, they're built in, so you can practice, take the exam before you take the exam. That's worth $109 by itself. Transcripts for every course. If you do a year's membership, you know, a year at a time, you can download anything and keep it offline. And the price is very, very affordable. Starts at $57 a month, and that's the run of the place. But I'm going to, $570 a year, you get 2 months free when you buy a year. But I'm going to just give you a special deal. We got an offer. Of course we do. Go to itpro.tv/MacBreak. And you can try it free for 7 days. But if you decide to sign up, you'll also get 30% off forever. That makes it less than $40 a month or $399 for an entire year. Very affordable. You got to. I'm sorry, the code is MacBreak30. So you go to itpro.tv/MacBreak. But the offer code is MacBreak30 to try it free for 7 days and save 30%. These guys are great. And by the way, they're geeks, so it's easy to cancel when you're done. That's not a problem. They're going to bury that setting somewhere, they know. Although I know a lot of people who already have the cert who stay there and just, you know, because this is how I stay up on what's going on. itpro.tv/MacBreak. MacBreak30 is the offer code. MacBreak Weekly is on the air. I have now updated both my iPad and my El Capitan 2012 MacBook Pro without incident, although some have reported incidents. Apple TV, we mentioned there's an update. There's an Apple Watch update also? No, yep. They did that. There is?
Yes, everything. All everything. The things, Leo.
All the things got updated. Okay. They're doing that a lot more, which is fine with me. Keep it up to date.
Same software stack across most of the stuff now.
Yeah, might as well, right? Apple just bought – Apple really – it's very interesting how Apple and their presence in China. But you don't usually think of Apple investing in kind of companies that aren't in their specific field. Didi Chuxing is the Uber of China. And Apple just put $1 billion into it.
$1 billion.
Now, remember, they have hundreds of billions of dollars overseas. They can't repatriate without paying taxes on it. So it's in their interest to invest internationally.
It's kind of like me putting $50 into Wealthfront. I mean, just to give you some sort of
you're
scale
right. For
idea.
Them, it's not, you know. Well, and you think it's a pure investment for them. It's not a. There's not a partnership play or anything like that.
I mean, there might be a bit. I mean, because I don't think it's a partnership play right now. Alipay, I think, is Alibaba Pay.
That would make sense. Yeah.
Well, that's what Didi uses over there. Oh. So I don't even know if they could get into the. I mean, they might eventually want to see if they could get into the payment space, but I don't even think that's the primary consideration. My thought would be two things. One. Let them make some outside investments that would probably pay off well. Didi is a company that has actually ironically invested in Lyft in the United States, but has the vast majority of the ride sharing market in China. is capitalized in a lot of other areas. It probably is just a good on paper investment. And then it helps them maybe get some insight into the Chinese market, and maybe even test the waters a little bit. Like they, unlike a lot of other companies, don't have a venture capital arm, but this could maybe be kind of a precursor for them doing something like Apple.
That's
Ventures
a good point. Google has a lot of money invested in a lot of companies through Google Ventures. Apple doesn't do that, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is also China, and Apple. China is an incredibly important market to Apple that has recently become, I don't know what the right word for it is, but they've had more protectionist movements from China. They've had struggles to move as much product as they anticipated in China.
Kind of a good way to make nice, you think?
Well, there's a lot of people who are wondering whether, you know, China sort of held out their hand or Apple held out their hand. But either way, it seems like this helps a lot of hands get together, which is something that is not uncommon in many. I mean, Alex was talking about this last week in terms of having to build things in the country where you want to manufacture. And, you know, Apple's partner, Foxconn, built factories in Brazil because Brazil has exorbitant import fees. Apple already has all the factories in China. There's a lot of business being taken place there, but not the sort of business that China is interested in, which is the infrastructure, the servers, the software, the products, all that kind of thing. So this is beyond anything else. And yeah, it could be a good investment. It could be a way to get extra data, although they collect a lot of data from iPhones already. But in many ways, Apple previously was Apple doing business in China. And this is now Apple actually being – it's sort of – the best analogy I can come up with is if you want to learn a language, like if you want to learn Chinese, I can go to a local college and I can speak it a little bit. But if I'm speaking it around English-speaking people, I'm only going to get so good. If I actually go to China and live there for a year or two, I'm going to get really good at speaking Chinese. And this gives Apple the opportunity to in many ways get savvier about local businesses, including all the politics of them, and in a way that has to happen, not that would be nice to happen.
Yeah, I everything that Christina and Renee has said, and I would add, this gives them a really harmless way to run a transportation service, a transportation infrastructure, where
word, transportation.
It's a great point.
So not only it's not just as simple as, hey, look, we can get the data from the phones of the drivers, but we can find out here's the legislative problems that we had that we're going to that has to be solved. Here's how to figure out how to entice people, what situations which people will use this instead of that. Here's when traffic patterns go this way or that way. But a lot of it is just management. So it seems like a natural thing that if you don't want to have your first foray into trying to be a transportation provider in the United States work as well as Apple Music did. It would help if you did that someplace else. Not that China is way someplace else, but it's not an Apple product. It is a company that they are investing in, and I think that pretty much every time they write a check with that many zeros in it, it really is about transportation as a future service.
I think that's very astute. Yeah, they have a lot to learn in that. And, you know, it's getting more and more clear that they have aspirations that way. Great article. Did we talk about this last week? We might have it in the About Avalon article. Apple is increasing their R&D substantially. And when they've done that in the past, it's usually because of a launch of a significant product. You know, for a long time, people like Ben Thompson and Jean-Louis Gasset pointed out that Apple spent kind of less on R&D than a lot of companies in the same position as them. And they still spend a lot less than even IBM, but they're now on track to spend $10 billion this year. That's up 30% from last year. And 4 years ago, they were only spending $3 billion a year.
Well, they have a lot more product lines now as well. I mean, so that some of that is normalization.
Well, see, that's what's interesting. So this article by Neil Seibert says, well, it must be more than just researching better iPhones and iPads. It must be about a new product line. He called it a pivot. I don't think that's a fair thing to say, but an entry into a new category.
But they've been doing that for years. Like Apple's been exploring televisions and explore VR. And they explore almost any product any pundit on any show could think that Apple would maybe be interested in. They have run investigations, research divisions, have things in the lab about it. So this is like I think Neil's totally on point. I think a lot of the pushback on him was totally on point too. That cars are something different. That cars is not about a small lab, you know, a pizza building.
It's expensive. It's
inside the Apple camp. Yeah, there's a lot of things that have to go into making a project like this.
Yeah. But really, stop thinking cars and start thinking transportation. The more I look into this, the more I'm convinced that I'm reminded that it's not that the iPhone was a better phone than the rest. It's because it anticipated where everybody was going. It wasn't that this was people. Here is just another kind of phone. Here is a way that Here is a device that understands why the phone before this has become so important, why the BlackBerry really took off, why the Palm really took off. Not let's copy this, but here is what has happened to society to make a Palm and to make a BlackBerry into a successful product. A car is a better version of a BlackBerry. It's a better version of a Palm. Society is in a place where it has changed in our attitudes about where we are and how we get from here to there, and the need to get from here to there is fundamentally changing. Yeah. And the first company that creates an iPhone for transportation is going to be as successful as Apple was when they created the iPhone of communications and information. It could be as simple as we want to create a green lane on every single highway and a class of transportation devices that are more suited for short hop transportation. If Apple makes an Apple Watch as opposed to an iPhone, they're not going to do well. But if they make an iPhone in this space where it's not just, hey, we saw Tesla make a nice electric car. Now we've made an electric car. See, it's a car and we put an electric engine instead of a gas engine. That's not a big idea. And that's not listening to how society is going. If they figure out how to create something that makes people not want to use their cars anymore and use this other device or this other infrastructure instead, that's what will be the big thing for them. And I really think that's what not just Apple, but everybody is trying to invest in.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key points is that when Apple was making the iPhone, everyone was sort of focused on BlackBerry. BlackBerry famously thought no one wants an iPhone like that. They want keyboards and they want data compression. And, you know, Google was busy copying BlackBerry, and Windows Mobile and Nokia were all doing the same thing. And Apple did something fundamentally better because they anticipated when things like LTE and things like – it was just the confluence of technologies really favored Apple's model for the iPhone. But now we have a market where, you know, Google is building a car. Amazon might be building a car that will give you discounts if you deliver packages on the way. Uber's building a car. Tesla's building a car. So all these companies that are really savvy, it's not just Apple alone ahead of the pack that's going to redefine what the experience is. I mean, maybe they will in terms of a service or a partnership, but in terms of raw technology, there's a lot of people working at this, and that means it's going to be a much more competitive, much less open to an Apple-style disruption market going on. But there's a lot Apple can do within the value of their ecosystem that if you are an existing Apple customer, that they could maybe secure at least a better beachhead going into that than a lot of other companies will.
You also have to think, I mean, by making this investment, you have to think that one of their ultimate goals has to be, if they are creating a car at some point, would this be a great way to get a fleet of your cars, whether they're self-driving or not, adopted by your partner who has invested $1 billion in you? You know, I mean, because Uber and Lyft are obviously both very much thinking about self-driving cars, but you have to think that Didi is as well. And if that's the direction Apple's going in, then, you know, having information about how logistical patterns work and how driving patterns work and anticipating what demand is going to be and having the ability to maybe build that into your car from the ground up could be interesting too.
We're going to take a break because we got to get Christina out of here, and I want to give you a chance, Christina, to do a pick of the week before you have to go in about 8 minutes.
All right.
All right. So think about what you want to tell people about, and I'm going to tell you right now about Wealthfront. If you are a young person, an old person, or someone in the middle, we all need to save for the future. You want a future, don't you? You want your kids to go to college. You want to buy a house someday. You want to retire. So you got to put money aside, but the key is putting it aside smart, doing it smart. And I'll tell you, putting a savings account, even a certificate of deposit, that's not smart. It's not growing. Hiring an advisor to run your money for you, that's expensive. Might be smart, but you're going to put between 1% and 3% of what you've got under investment in their pocket, not yours. And of course, you could do it yourself. You're smart. That's what I thought. I read these books, all of them. And invested the money, then the problem is you get busy, life goes on, and 10 years later, what happened to that money I put away? Let's do it better. Let's do it smart with Wealthfront. Wealthfront is computer trading. It's not day trading. It's for long-term investments, but it's doing it the right way. And they don't just check in every quarter to rebalance your stuff. Because it's a computer, they do it all the time. They're always rebalancing and evaluating, doing things like tax loss harvesting to increase your return while reducing your tax bill. These are things that are basic, fundamental, well-known things. But you know, you forget to do, or you don't do, or you didn't know about. Even your advisor may not be doing it very often. He's got other clients too. And The best part is they're only taking a tiny fraction, 0.25%, not 1, 2, or 3% of what you have on your investment, but 0.25% per year. And there's never a commission, transaction fee, no hidden fees at all. Now, look, you got to go to wealthfront.com/MacBreak and read up about it. Read about their advisors, the theory behind this. It's really smart software, getting smarter all the time. You've probably seen the articles by traditional investment advisors in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere. They're terrified because, frankly, these guys, the computers do it better. I hate to say it. They do. Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. No wonder they got $3 billion in assets under management right now, and they could have some of yours. The minimum investment is as little as $500. Again, I want you to read up. In fact, they've got some nice free things you can go. You can go right there and go through the questionnaire. It's very short. They have a very streamlined process of figuring out what your risk tolerance is, what your time frame is, your goals are. They'll give you a free portfolio right then and there, so you can see what the process is. And if you want to take it and walk, you could do that. They also will look at your existing portfolio if you want and tell you if you're overpaying for fees, if you're not fully diversified and so forth. So this really, this is all free. Once you have a Wealthfront account, you can also put all your other accounts in there. So you have a single dashboard that tells you how everything's doing, your bank and your brokerage accounts, all your investments, everything. Wealthfront.com, and here's the best part. If you do decide to sign up, your first $15,000 free, not 0.25%, but free forever. But you have to go to wealthfront.com/MacBreak. It's a really good way to put money aside. Just a little bit a year, especially if you're young, you'll be amazed at how it grows, thanks to the magic of compound interest. Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. Give it a try today. I think you'll like it. We are talking Apple. Christina Warren's here from Mashable, iMore.com's Renee Ritchie, and of course, Andy Inako from the Chicago Sun-Times. I'll let you, I know you got to get out of here, Christina. So what's your pick of the week?
All right. So my pick of the week is an iPhone app called Rex, R-E-X. And it's an app that basically lets you recommend stuff to people. And it can be anything. It can be an article. It can be a podcast. It can be a movie. It can be a TV show. It can be a restaurant. It can be a place to visit. And it's a new kind of social network. It's actually a really beautiful app. And I've been using it for the last week or so, and I'm really enjoying it. It's a really good way of finding and discovering things. And if you find something that you like a TV show, it'll show you all the services that you can view the show on.
See, I would follow you. I want your TV recommendations,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, you can follow me on Rex and yeah. See what I'm recommending. You can then add things to a vault so you can watch them later. When you go to watch things, it'll show you all the services it's on. Same with music. It'll show you all the services it's available to listen to. And I'm really enjoying it. I've talked to the developer a little bit, and they've got a great kind of team of people involved. A lot of artists and creators have picked it up. So Rex is my pick of the week. I really like it.
Really like that. Good. I'm downloading it right now because I want to follow Christina Warren. All of us should follow Christina Warren. She's on Mashable.com, film_girl on Twitter.
Yes.
Plug something.
And you can also listen to my tech podcast I do with Simone de Rochefort and Brianna Wu called Rocket.
Rocket.
And so Rocket is my podcast.
And where can we find that?
You can find that at relay.fm/rocket.
Nice. Great to see you, Christina. Thank you for being
Thanks
here.
For you.
All right. Take care. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week, sir. Oops. He's muted. We muted him. Are you there?
I muted myself. I apologize.
Okay. No, that's good.
So I was talking about this delicious coffee that I was making earlier, and this is tangentially related to Apple because there's a method to how I make coffee now. I'm just going to grab it over here. So I use an AeroPress now.
Oh, you finally joined the club.
I have to think it's been recommended on MacBreak Weekly specifically before because, as everybody knows, Apple and coffee go together really, really well. The more coffee you drink, the later you can stay
up
using your
Apple devices.
I don't
know if we've ever made it a pick here, but God knows I'm a believer. I own several of them.
I love it because, you know, I cannot for the life of me fathom out how to use an espresso machine. People have shown me pour over. I'm too impatient for pour over. I can't just stand there. I want the coffee now. I don't want to sit there impatiently. There's nothing zen about it to me. Coffee is about getting caffeine delivered, but I want really good caffeine. So I got the AeroPress and I've been using it for a while. And it really is great. You just put the filter into this little tray here. And it is made by the same people who made that Aerobi Frisbee. So, I mean, they know how to make plastic. You can tighten it up, then you take the coffee, you put it inside,
You add a plunger, you push down, and it uses air pressure to extract what is really, really good coffee. If you just fill it up, you might get something equivalent to an espresso. Add some hot water, you'll get something like an Americano. It doesn't froth milk for you, but if you want to froth your own milk, you can easily make a cappuccino or a latte or a flat white or anything like that. And then you can just – I made some iced coffee, so I'm just
– it's awesome.
I put some ice and mint, and yeah. I filled it up with this coffee. And it's fantastic. It takes no time. It is super easy to clean up. And
it's
it keeps
cheap.
Me awake.
It's like,
super cheap.
It's nothing. That's why I own – we have a travel one. We don't travel. We don't go on a – because, you know, you can get bad coffee sometimes.
Yes.
Shocking.
Everywhere.
Everywhere you can get. Every hotel in the world serves bad coffee. So we bring the AeroPress. I'm in charge of finding hot water. It's the best thing ever. And a lot of coffee connoisseurs say this is the way – if you want to really taste coffee, to make it.
It's so different, especially if you – I subscribe to Blue Bottle, which was formerly known as Tonks, and some other people have local roasteries that they
perfect
really like. And
Tonks,
if you get fresh
yeah.
coffee, you just grind it. You put yeah. it straight in. I use a nice burr grinder because we're not animals here. And then you fill up your coffee. You plunge it down, and it is better that you will stop wasting all your money at Starbucks and have more money to spend on apps and devices and
yeah.
things.
It's on Amazon. It's like $29.95. You buy more filters when you run out, but this is the least expensive way you could make coffee. Frankly.
And they're tiny filters. They're not giant filters that you don't use half of because you're busy
pouring
over stuff.
Yeah. There's not a lot of waste. I have to agree with you. The only thing I worry about is it's plastic and you're pouring boiling water in it, but I don't know if that matters. Does that matter?
I pour so much boiling water and so much plastic in my life. The other stuff will take me out. I mean, I have radio waves passing through my skull all day.
So I know.
Yeah.
No, I love this. And it really makes a great cup of coffee. Good recommendation. The AeroPress. Ironically, it is from the fake Frisbee manufacturers, Araby.
And nobody knows about it because they're not really in stores. You have to kind of order them online. Some high-end coffee stores will stock them, but most people just never hear about it. So they get the kind of coffee that burns on the bottom or the kind that takes forever to make or the really expensive machine that is too much trouble to use. And this is so simple.
I once counted. I have more ways of making coffee than I have computers. I have like 15 ways. And, you know, we have a coffee station and I have 15 ways, every way possible of making coffee. And this
for my
is the
birthday,
one.
Georgia got me the Bodum that uses the fire induction.
Yep,
so you heat
yep,
it and it sucks
yep.
it. I've used it once or twice, but it looks beautiful.
It's
but
a good
again,
show.
I'm too lazy.
Yeah. Looks like you're making methamphetamine. But I have a cold coffee drip solution does really look like a chemistry lab. All of that stuff. The thing about this is it's easy to clean. It's fast. You know, and a lot of times, getting that caffeine right in the vein as quickly as possible.
I have a central line, Leo. I mean, I go from...
It's a priority.
It lets me go from wanting coffee to having coffee at ridiculous speed.
That's probably the best reason to get one of these.
Oh, nice.
We have them all over the studio, too. Yeah, these are great. Good recommendation. Okay. Thank you, Renee. Andy Yannacco, your pick of the week.
My pick is simple. It's an iPad sleeve, but it is the only iPad Pro sleeve that has earned the Andy Yannacco seal of nitpickiness because I don't. There are a lot of like sleeves that will you can get the iPad inside it, but it's too big because it's designed to hit to hold all kinds of different iPads, tablets, or it's not designed for. Or they took a guess at the dimensions, which is the reason why I was using a camera wrap because I like to be nice and snug. And it's called the Cache. It's also available, I think, for smaller sized iPads. But the iPad Pro slits into it with almost no fuss whatsoever. There is no Velcro here, which is unnecessary. There's just a long tab that you just fold in. And now you have your perfectly nicely protected $1,000 piece of metal and glass that you can then drop in your laptop bag. And if you drop it, you drop your laptop bag, it will be nicely protected. It's thick enough to give you some protection, but not so thick that it becomes like traveling with a hypoallergenic pillow or something like that. $40, but if you looked at this, it's really like all the bin stuff that I've been trying for the past month, really nicely made. I mean, look at this seam. It's like double stitched here. It's thick nylon. It feels like it's something that's really going to last you a long, long time, as opposed to something you're going to use until it gets muffed up in about 8 months, and then that's it. I wish I knew exactly what these two straps were for. I bet it's so that you could lash. I don't know, like so you can use it.
I can tell you
paddle.
If you really want to know.
Tell me, I'd like to know.
Because Tom Bin, I have many Tom Bin bags. It's not just a sleeve. It's a solution. So that integrates in to a larger Tom Bin bag. You see, it's part of the whole.
Oh, right, right. So that's okay. I did a Twitter question because I mentioned like my someone asked me a question about my favorite iPad bag, and I said what it was because I still love my Patagonia bag, and someone said, oh, I like this one, and then so many people came up with good suggestions that I just said, okay, hashtag tell me your favorite iPad Pro bag. Mm-hmm. And enough people mentioned the bin bags that the bin company contacted me and said, well, would you like to try some stuff?
Oh, good.
And then two big boxes containing pretty much everything they make came in. And
I guarantee you not, because they make thousands. It feels like thousands of doohickeys.
I'll say that, again, fourth time I mentioned the house cleaning, one of the reasons is that, and as often happens, huge boxes arrive, and now I've got – the house is just – walls around my box collection.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah,
now I need to find places to put all these boxes. There are other bags where if you want to take like a laptop out for inspection, instead of having to actually take it out of the bag, there are two.
They have stuff. Yeah.
Now you're making me realize there are like a couple of rings inside the bag, the actual big laptop bag. So you can actually pull this out like a drawer and let it flop over.
I have the Western Flyer. I have it in red. It's a beautiful bag. And this thing you could carry. This is actually luggage as well as, you know. And so the idea is to accommodate whatever kind of, you know, technology needs you have.
Yeah, they sent me one of those too, which I think you'll like it.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about any one of these things specifically until I've been using it for a while. So that one's going to have to wait until I actually take a trip. As it turns out, that is a bag that I kind of needed because there are a lot of times where I'm gone for just two nights, and unfortunately, on one of those nights, I have to dress like a respectable adult
exactly
and have
you want.
A change of shoes.
Yep.
Right.
I've been using the Ristretto for years, and Dieter Bohn, my former boss, who's now at The Verge, introduced me to them, and they put out a new model where the pocket, things could fall out of the pocket, and we tweeted about it, and they're like, yep, we know, we're making a brand new model, and they turned around and had one that was zip closed within, I think, a month or two. I used that for 2 years. It's just phenomenally good service and good quality bags.
Yeah.
A lot of bag manufacturers are really good that way. There was I forget the manufacturer, but they sent me a bag to try out. And then I said, that's nice, but I just really wish it had a strap right here. And then 2 months later, they sent me a new bag that had the strap right there. That's now part of their product line that they said internally, this is known as the Andy Anatko strap. And it's like
the Anatko.
And it's
like the Anatko. They should make an Anatko.
Well, they should make a lot of people who've had interact with me have said they should make an Anatko strap because I would have used that on him about five times. But that's why I love the variety of bags because each one is a really specific answer to an individual's question of what thing have I desperately wanted on, in, or around a bag? What feature am I desperately missing on this bag I spent $500 for that's perfect except for it doesn't have a place I can put this or it doesn't have a pocket on the outside where I can easily put something in and out? And that's why you'll have two bags that are equally wonderful. One is completely useless for somebody. One is absolutely flawless. And the only difference is that the bag, the pocket that's perfectly sized for the sunglasses, on one of them it's on the outside where you can get at it easily. On another one it's on the inside where it's protected against bumps and slabs. So you like to, it's like saying go into any restaurant and just order like a simple steak, and you'll find out here is what the chef thinks is wrong about everybody else's steak. Here's the way they do it.
Steaks all the way down.
Good recommendation. Bin is spelled BIHN, TOMBIHN.com, and I that's $40 for the cash.
Incidentally, you don't know how freaked out I was about 5 minutes ago when I was pasting in the URL and I saw the word cache and I got out of my OS cache. Wait a minute, where's the actual official link? Then I realized, oh, that's right, it's called the cache. So there will be the word cache maybe somewhere in the URL.
I'm looking now. I just see that they've created something called the Empire Builder, which will allow you to add the horizontal cache for your iPad as well as a brain cell, which is the thing they have to protect your laptop. These guys, they're, you know, the problem is they feed my fetish.
Yeah.
Which I, well, it's, I don't know.
I will say in closing, though, having used bags for years and years and years and years, the most expensive thing you can buy is a cheap bag.
Yeah, I agree.
You can go nuts and go stupid and pay a lot of money you don't have to pay. But the difference between a $100 bag and a $200 bag is immense, and maybe 10 times greater than the difference between a $200 bag and a $500 bag. But once you at least get your hands on, if you have a friend who spent $250 for a good bag, like one of these bin bags, you will say, oh, that's because look how thick this nylon is, and look how it's actually lined on both sides, and look how durable the zipper is, and look how they're using all YKK tabs, and how their zipper pulls on both sides, not just one. And you say, oh, that's why that's why I buy a bag every 9 to 10 months, as opposed to this guy who's had the same bag for 5 years.
The difference is pennies. So pennies a day.
But then on the other hand, if you have 10 bags,
I confess.
Then you have a coffee preparation problem.
14 ways to make coffee, 10 kinds ways to carry my laptop.
You're an aficionado, Leo.
You're a
connoisseur.
Yeah.
A connoisseur.
Yeah. Hey, here's something free that I'm surprised nobody mentioned. Have you played yet with Gboard, Google's new keyboard for iOS?
Yes.
Really?
It's like
great.
Use no other. It's just done. Right?
Yeah, just the ability to search for things within the keyboard is just to access to search. Like, so many times I have to flip between apps because I need to grab that thing or grab that picture or grab that URL, as opposed to, I'm guessing the keyboard instead says, I'm guessing you were looking for this. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Google Keyboard.
The only negative, and a number of people pointed this out, is there's no voice dictation button as there is on Android. And that's, I think, probably an Apple thing. Like, Apple wants to make sure you use the home button to launch Siri.
Well, also, I mean, like, the keyboards are extensions, so they have very minimal resources available to them, which is why they have to let – some people get freaked out that it says, you know, hit the share button, and they think, oh, all my stuff is going to Google. No, that just lets – and I wish Apple would clarify this and make that button more apparent. But that also just means that the app can go – like, the keyboard can go back to the app and pull more information than the extension itself could contain.
Right. So that's what's kind of cool. If you have the Google keyboard, as I do on my Apple Notes program – it looks like a regular keyboard. It's got autocorrect. It has some. You don't have to have a separate emoji keyboard. It also has animated GIFs, and it will base those on the content in your note. You can also tap that G thing, and it will look for stuff to match, and you could do a search. And it includes not only the standard Google text search, but by the way, without leaving your note program or whatever, but also image search and animated GIF search. So if you just, you know, you're saying, I need more animated GIF kitties, I could put that in there, and then you paste it in, and you
can. The most interesting thing about this is Apple spent years trying to disintermediate Google from iOS. Like, if you search, you'll get iBooks recommendations. If you search, you could switch away from it. It'll go through Siri. They'll do everything they can to stop queries going directly to Google. And then by making one fantastic keyboard, suddenly everyone is sending everything back to Google again. And I love that, because you're competing off quality. You're not competing off any market lock-in.
And there are lots of settings. I mean, if you're one of those people who wants all uppercase keys, you know, the old style app, you can do that. There's a ton of settings in here. I think it has the same problem all third-party keyboards have on iOS, which is Apple takes it back even if you delete the Apple keyboard when you're entering a password, things like that. But this is such a nice keyboard.
It's as good as you can do with current iOS.
You guys agree?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I was really pleased.
It really does. There are some places where you want simplicity, and then there's some place where the culture of choice will just always make a better product, and keyboards are right there. I really think one of the reasons why iPhones and iPads have gotten so much better in the past couple of years is just simply that if you don't like X, you have the option of replacing X with Y, not system-wide, but at least the important places like the keyboard. And it just goes to show you that this is not the sort of thing that you would think of unless you are a search-based company that's used not just based on search, but is also has been spending years with online apps that let the manufacturer observe how people are working with information to see that, well, actually, people usually do it this way, so why don't we make it easy for people to do it this way?
Yeah. Glide or swipe typing is built in. Yeah. Emoji suggestions as you type, it will. If you want a happy face and type something happy, it'll know. Auto correction, auto capitalization, character preview, that's the pop-up.
I wish there was a toggle that would let you switch between Roboto and San Francisco, because I'm one of those people who notice the difference in characters.
It is Roboto, isn't it?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you can't type in San Francisco, but the keyboard is in Roboto.
Yeah, it's just my brain sees two different fonts on the page and just keeps switching back and forth. So not everyone cares.
Yeah, that's because you're a designer. You see these things that we don't see.
Now you've got me once again picking up my actual like Google Nexus phone that runs Android and saying that no, the new keyboard is not available.
I checked immediately.
There's a new keyboard. It was released a while ago, like a couple of weeks ago. But Google actually will just sort of say we will let the first 50,000 people have it, and then the thousand. It's one of the reasons why they don't have to do like a 0.0001 update because they decided to release it slowly to see what happens if people start mutating if we put this in the water supply.
But also, yes, I mean, like, it's nice.
Did you get it? Because I don't have it on my Android.
I've been checking and it just arrived today as available.
Yeah, I did get an update, because but it wasn't that
much. Google technically doesn't have to make, like, there's no pressure to make this for Android, but they have a huge reward in making it for iOS.
Exactly.
And back in the search pipeline.
Exactly. You're going to be using the Google keyboard. Although I have to say Android, because they've had allowed third-party keyboards for so long, has a very rich ecosystem of third-party keyboards. Apple does now somewhat, too.
Not only that, but just as a sidebar, one of the problems that of the Android ecosystem is that a company like Samsung can reskin everything and make it look more like a Samsung phone than anything else. So by releasing basically everything that makes the application launcher, the photo system, the keyboard now, all kinds of stuff are now just separate apps you can download into your phone, no matter who makes it. So you can make every phone look like stock Android. And also it means that now if they want to, they don't have to push out a system update to update the keyboard. They can just update an app. So it's one. There are a lot of reasons why Android went from it sucks to okay, it's good. It's not as good as the iPhone. To they solved so many of the pain points that now I really feel like I have a free choice. And this sort of thing is in there too. I'm excited about a keyboard. I'm an idiot.
I know. Gboard. No, it's awesome. Gboard.
Not since I got the Apple IIe. It's like, oh my God, I've got upper and lowercase characters. Yay. I'm excited about typing.
It's interesting. Google's releasing a lot of stuff. They released a new social network called Spaces yesterday. Before Google I.O., we will be covering the Google I.O. keynote tomorrow, starting 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC. So our live coverage of Google's keynote, I imagine, I don't think they've released everything, but they've released an awful lot of stuff ahead of time. This is so unlike Apple, where they keep a lid on everything. Google's like kind of leaking all this stuff out. There must be more to say.
They're also encouraging developers at I/O to use Spaces for like just hanging
Spaces
out
is
chat.
For I/O. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It works great. I downloaded it yesterday as soon as it was available, and I like how simple it is. That it seems as though every bruise and every welt and every broken bone they suffered with Google Wave and G+ and everything else they did, they've healed. The bone has healed and made it a little bit stronger.
By the way, Spaces is available on iOS as well as Android, there's a Chrome plugin. Mike Elgin's already started the largest Google Space ever. He's got Let's Talk About Spaces, and there's like hundreds and hundreds of people in there.
We're so lucky that virtual real estate is effectively free because we just keep building all these things.
I know. And I have to say, I'm gun-shy. It's like, well, I don't know if I want to invest in Spaces. They might kill it.
I have my Minecraft server. I don't need Spaces.
Yeah, right. I don't need it. And I got my Minecraft server. You're exactly right. Oh, by the way, as long as you're mentioning, OS X server was updated as well.
Yeah. One guy in the background. Yes.
One guy. I'm running it at home. I did a dumb thing. I was trying to turn off, you know, I have SSH on there so I can log into it. And I was trying to only allow it with a SSH key instead of typing in a password because that's a little bit less secure. And I've somehow disabled all logins of all kinds. So
it's so secure you can't get in.
It's so secure I can't even. But I have to go home now and turn off whatever I just turned on. But that's the fun of running a server. You get to do things like that. Thank you. You guys are great. We want to say thank you to Christina Warren of Mashable for joining us. Of course, Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times. Always a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
And your podcast material is on, who Is that Relay also?
Relay FM. Yep. And we've got 2/3 of the. I'm not traveling for Google I/O, but Russell and Yasmin are there, so we're going to do a special recording shortly after the keynote. They've got a room and everything.
Nice. Should be a lot of fun. Also, thanks to Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Now 2 podcasts a week, and Debug and all the great stuff. So follow them everywhere. And I do follow iMore on Instagram because it's a lot of sexy product shots.
We just launched it. Yeah, it's all new. We're trying to set up a look, Leo.
It has a look. I see a picture. I go, oh, that's iMore's new Instagram. I see.
Well, don't look right now because it's full of donuts and it'll ruin your day.
Don't do that to me.
I know. I know.
We thank you all for being here. We had a great live audience. If you want to be here, please email tickets at twit.tv. We'd love having you here. It's fun. The audience always gets here before I do, so just know that. I'll make an entrance eventually. You can also watch live. We do the show 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC, every Tuesday. If you can't watch live and be in the chat room live, you can always watch after the fact because we make on-demand audio and video available at our website, twit.tv/mbw, but also you can use any of the podcast apps. And you know what? I was just playing with our new Twit apps. We have we had an in-house developer working on app for iOS and Android, and it's getting there. We're getting close. We'll probably have a beta release the next week or so. So that's exciting. But, of course, we don't really need those because so many great developers have written apps for every platform, everywhere you want to be. So just check it out. Subscribe. Be here every Tuesday. We don't want you to miss an episode. Thanks for joining us. Now back to work because break time is over.